one-stop shop for all your metal roofing and metal buildings.
Shotgun for Darnold on a 3rd and 2 at the front of Detroit. Darnold, pump fake. He's got time. Darnold launches a deep one towards the end zone, and it is caught. Oh, Robbie Anderson, what a grab. Touchdown, Jets.
Now, it was a very impressive debut for Sam Darnold. It did not start well last night. His first pass right across the defense. Darius Slay steps in front, goes the other way. Touchdown. Lions, that was the highlight of the night for Detroit, who looked awful. Looked awful. Dusty, I thought it was pretty interesting, though, the results of last night's games. The Rams, to me, might have had the best debut of any team on the opening weekend of the elite teams. I would say there were a couple of surprises that were pretty impressive debuts, but that was a nice effort from the Rams last night.
I thought second half was definitely a nice effort. I mean, they were down at halftime, so I can't give them too much credit, but I did think in the second half that defense stepped up and the offense had much more flow to it. So, yeah, Rams are good, man. They're talented. Jared Goff, smart with the football. We know Todd Gurley's an absolute stud, and they got some absolute dudes on the defensive side of the ball. That being said, I thought Derek Carr played like junk in the second half last night. I didn't think he was very good, and John Gruden looked to be a little bit frustrated with the offensive deficiencies in that second half. I don't think the Raiders are very good, though, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't expect much from the Raiders this year.
That's understandable. I thought the game, though, last night was a perfect setup for the Raiders. You know, it's excitement there. John Gruden's head coaching debut coming back. So I think that's a big situation for them at home to play well. Mm-hmm. But the Rams, when they got settled in, I think the Rams defense had a lot to do with Carr playing the way that he did. I don't think Carr's really made a lot of mistakes. Not anywhere near what he played like in 2016. But Dusty, I think the Rams defense, I mean, where are the weaknesses? Maybe at linebacker a little bit, but other than that, they're really good.
I think personnel wise, it's going to be tough to find better frontline personnel than what the LA Rams have. They are. They are very, very talented, no doubt. And if we continue to see Jared Goff progress and get better, that's going to be, as most people anticipated. I think Pat Jones picked them to win the Super Bowl. They're going to be right there in the thick of things in that extremely tough NFC.
For the Lions offense to make the Jets defense look like it did last night is one of the bigger stunners that I've seen. The Jets had not had a defensive touchdown since 2013, that had a defensive touchdown.
You're not going to give Todd Bowles any credit, man? His defensive
Todd Bowles has been there for a long time.
I mean, it's his fourth year, yeah.
They haven't had a defensive touchdown.
Well, he did last night. Also,
as the Bills and the Dolphins. I mean, they should be falling into defensive touchdowns every so often.
Five picks last night. I think it's funny. First of all, don't know, and you said this earlier, why, if you're the New York Jets and you're able to get some signs, why broadcast that and share with everybody? I mean, sign stealing is something that goes on all throughout football. Sometimes you get signs, sometimes you don't. But when you get signs or you have something that tips them off, you just keep it to yourself. You don't have to go out there and say we had to take on you guys. No need. Just take credit for the great defensive performance and the five takeaways. You don't have to tell everybody how the sausage is made. You know what I mean, Mark? Just enjoy the sausage.
Enjoy the sausage. Don't need a tour of the sausage factory. That was
And one other thing just on that, and I say this all the time. If there's anyone out there today, and I haven't heard anybody, but I'm sure there will be somewhere, if you're out there and you think that sign stealing is cheating or sign stealing, how could the Jets have possibly done that? Give me a break. You don't want someone to steal your signs? Do a better job of not showing them. Change up your signs. Do things different. If you think that in college and the NFL there aren't people whose sole purpose during a game is to try to pick up on your signs, you're crazy. And if you're a team out there that doesn't have someone doing that, then you're behind the game. I don't know what to tell you. This is just standard protocol, part of what transpires in big-time football.
The Jets and the Dolphins are going to play on Sunday, and someone will be 2-0. One of those two teams will be undefeated.
I mean, I would lean Jets, if I'm having to be honest here.
It's a home for the Jets.
I would lean Jets, but who knows? Sam Darnold was good, though, Mark.
The Lions... I,
And that, if they get better quarterback play, they ran the football effectively last night. And if they just, you know, Sam Darnold doesn't have to go, you know, not have to do too much. And I didn't think he did that last night. He only took kind of what was available. He had the bad play, but after that, he cleaned things up, was very efficient. The one shot down the field was an absolute dime, but he didn't really put the ball in harm's way. And if they can, you know, stick to that recipe where they run the football, their defense is improved, and a quarterback that's going to kind of take what the defense gives them and not put them behind the eight ball, I mean, that's a good recipe, and we see that a lot with young quarterbacks.
Matt Stafford also is an interesting guy for me because I think that he takes a lot of heat. He looked like he had a terrible game last night, although he got banged up early in the game and tried to gut it out. But the Lions, really, Dusty, they don't have much of a semblance of any pass rush. Ziggy Ansah got hurt and didn't come back into the game in the first quarter last night, which that makes a difference for them because he's by far their best pass rusher up front. And then little or no running game at all for Detroit. They throw to their backs out of the backfield, but they don't have an offensive line that can get tough yards, and therefore they kick a lot of field goals in the red zone. But I don't know how they put together such a good year last year. They won a lot of close games. I think that was one reason. But this is a team that I think is going to take a huge step back this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Mark, they can't run the football.
They can't run the football.
They haven't been able to run the football in a long time now. I mean, it's a real problem for them. They don't have Calvin Johnson anymore. I mean, Golden Tate's kind of, you know, he's the go-to guy there. And, man, when you're that one-dimensional, it can be extremely problematic. You know, they've had to allocate so much money to their quarterback, and they've not put a running game around him. So, I mean.
Is that a systematic thing, Dusty? I mean, is it coaching? Is it philosophy? Is it the way that they teach their offensive lineman technique? But it's not a coincidence of those things that have happened to them.
They haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since 2013. That was Reggie Bush. I forgot Reggie Bush even played there.
They haven't had a 100-yard rusher in any game. There's a tremendous streak.
It's been a long time.
It's over 100 games or something like that.
It's been a long time. You know, I don't know, Mark. I mean, think about it. They allocated so much of the resources to the throw game with Calvin Johnson and the quarterback Matthew Stafford. It's tough to put, you know, a lot of other pieces around. So, yeah, I'd say the offensive line has been subpar. They've tried to draft a few offensive linemen. They haven't necessarily hit. So, I don't know, man. But this isn't something that just reared its ugly head last night. You know, their inability to run the football and not solely rely on Matthew Stafford slinging the ball around the yard, it's been a problem for Detroit for several years now.
Well, I think that's good news for the Vikings. I think it's good news for the Packers in that division if it makes things a little, and probably even good news for the Bears, is that I think that the Bears might have a better football team than what the Lions do this year. That's a tough
way
to open up the season. Tough way to open up the season, man, at your house, getting spanked at home by the Jets. That is really bad. Really bad.
My favorite tweet of the night last night came from our very own Doug Gottlieb. Doug Gottlieb, he says last night, "We tried to tell you, me and at Colin Cowherd, hashtag Sam Darnold." Does everybody just want to take credit for Sam Darnold? It's so interesting to me. It is one game. It's like people thought that this guy wasn't, you know, been talked about for over a year now. I mean, last week, Jim was going to be the first person to declare Sam Darnold a star. Now I got Doug Gottlieb's telling everyone on Twitter that him and Colin Cowherd have told you guys. I mean, this guy was being billed as the number one pick and the top quarterback since the start of last season. Like, I don't know. It's just crazy to me how many people want to come out and start to declare, "I told you first on Sam Darnold." I mean, I think there's a lot of people that recognize. If you watch tape on Sam Darnold in college, okay, if you watched him play, you could tell he had special traits. Yeah, he threw the ball to the other team too much, no question. But like a lot of people had said, it was only his third year in college. He was a redshirt sophomore. He wasn't even 21 yet. You got to think the guy's going to get better. And as you talked about a lot, Mark, he was playing with an offensive line that was terrible. Yet he was still making plays on the tape that you just go, wow, that's special. Not many people can do that kind of thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, it is surprising that Sam Darnold was that successful in his debut last night, because we don't typically see rookies be that impressive, especially after starting the way he did. But interesting to me, Mark, and everybody's trying to take credit here for Sam Darnold, when it seemed like, I felt like a lot of people thought that Sam Darnold was going to have a good chance to be a good pro quarterback for a while now.
Yeah, no, that's very true. as that very a guy that's the third pick overall. The reason he wouldn't have been even higher pick was because of Saquon Barkley, who is going to be another good player.
That's the real question.
The fact that he didn't is the number one quarterback going one overall. I don't think that Sam Darnold's the Giants may have screwed that up.
I think not taking
a quarterback. But I think as long as you get a really good player there, it's not as bad as passing on someone that if you went bankrupt on the pick.
Well, you know, the Giants, they basically said that we still believe in Eli Manning when they took Saquon Barkley, right, Mark? I mean, and they said that...
It's been a long time since Eli Manning's been a very good quarterback. A couple years.
I'm in agreement with you, but I mean, they had to have done that self-evaluation and come to the conclusion that they feel good enough about him. It wasn't that they felt good about Davis Webb, Mark.
No.
So, anyway, I think that... If there is a time that Jets fans can kind of feel that they got one over on Giants fans, it's probably today. I mean, obviously, there's a long way to see how this thing plays out, but you got to think that after Eli was not very good in the opener, and he was awful last year, and you and I both kind of think that his best football is well behind him, we'll see down the road, ultimately, if the Giants made a massive mistake and allowing Sam Darnold to slip through their grasp into the other team right there in that city.
The Dak Prescott, we brought him up yesterday in terms of the long-term deal with the Cowboys and what he's worth. His quarterback rating was 23 and change on Sunday against the Panthers. They've got a tough test against the Giants defense coming up Sunday night, which has been a great game in Dallas. Usually happens early in the season and is always pretty close.
I heard you and Jim talking.
Is that more on Dak? Is that more on the offense, offensive game plan and approach there, Dusty? They didn't hand it off to Ezekiel Elliott very much. What was the problem with the Cowboys in week one?
Everything offensively for me. I mean, I thought it was their inability to block people up front. I didn't think they did a very good job, protecting the quarterback, and I think they did a very good job in the running game. I don't understand why Zeke Elliott only had 15 carries. Talked about that yesterday. It's just a head scratcher that you rested this guy for the entire preseason because he was going to have such a heavy workload once the season got here and he gets 15 carries. I know he caught the ball three times out of the backfield, but I mean, come on now. I mean, this is a guy, and my whole thing with that is, Mark, you have allocated so many of your resources to the run game. You've drafted three guys in the first round. Understand Travis Frederick out. You spent your second round pick this year on Connor Williams. You took a top five pick in Ezekiel Elliott. That's a lot of resources to the run game, right? I mean, you've built your team to be able to run the football, but then you don't go out there and run the football. So that was a bit of a head scratcher. I also thought Dak was just off. I didn't think Dak played well. I thought there was a third down in the first half when I thought he could have easily ran for a first down, and instead he's rolling to his left and he throws back across to his right, and it was just a bad throw. So I don't know, man. I didn't think he was very good making decisions, and I thought even when he had some open receivers, he was misfiring. I just thought the Cowboys' offense was really porous on pretty much every level. I did listen to what you and Jim said yesterday. Y'all were talking, and I texted later. I was on delay. And he was talking about would you give Dak Prescott $100 million? I mean, if you were asking me today, I'd lean towards no. But I do think that you have to let the season bear itself out because the guy looked incredible as a rookie. When they ran the ball extremely effectively, and they could lean on that. Last year when they couldn't run the ball as effectively and he had to throw a little bit more, you know, he was a little bit more suspect. So I think through one game, he didn't look very good yesterday, but I can't just close the door on Dak yet. But I will say he needs to step it up. And obviously this season is kind of do or die as far as being willing to sit down and guarantee him a lot of money moving forward.
The wide receiver position is in week one to me was as bad as advertised. I don't think there's a whole lot they can do to fix that spot.
But Cole Beasley looked pretty good. I was happy to see him kind of pick it back up. He had 7 grabs for 73. But no, aside from that, Mark, you're right. It was not. No star power.
The advanced statistics on Beasley are really kind of interesting to me. He's excellent at what he does. Possession receiver, short underneath routes, but it's shocking to me that any of those short underneath routes never turn into 20-yard gains. I mean, I think Cole Beasley's in terms of athletes.
We had a 17-yard gain the other day.
But I'm saying is that he's got all kinds of receptions, 8, 7, 6, you know, but 17 yards, there's just no big play potential with him. None.
But that's kind of what he is, though, man. I mean, different guys serve different roles.
Slot receivers, I know, but slot receivers can turn into big plays. But I'm not expecting a ton of big plays, but there are no big plays. None.
No, I'm with you. But again, then I think you looked to Allen Hurns, who you gave $6 million a year for. And you looked to Michael Gallup, who you took in the third round. But that's just not what Cole Beasley is. He never has been. He never will be. But he does serve an important role within this offense. I mean, he's a guy that can move the sticks for you when you need to grab on third and five, and you need somebody to sit down, you know, a little bit in a soft zone and catch a pass for you. And move the stick. So, I mean, I don't know. Cole Beasley, for me, was the last of the Dallas Cowboys' offensive problems on Sunday.
My point is that he excels in the role that he does, but it's not enough to compensate for the fact that the Cowboys have no, and this is a blame on the quarterback as well, I think, somewhat, no downfield threat. That's a bad situation to be in the NFL. Because teams are going to load up and they're going to try to stop the run against Dallas.
And Jeff Swaim isn't Jason Witten, okay? That just he's not.
No, the tight end position in Dallas is not going to be the same for a long time.
Tight end by committee, I mean, you know, great for Blake Jarwin, you know, great for, you know, but when you keep four tight ends and it's just going to be kind of tight end by committee, it's definitely a different situation than when you've had one of the better all-purpose tight ends in NFL history who never missed a down, never missed a game, who had been a key cog in there for over a decade. Now you're kind of going tight end by committee. Nobody's really that great. Everybody's just kind of average. It's, you know, it's a different look out there for the Cowboys offense for sure.
Well, the story of Blake Jarwin is a great one. It's awesome. Undrafted guy to be able to make the Dallas Cowboys is
it's amazing.
It's a huge testament to him and what he does. But that doesn't mean, you know, when you compare him as
to Jason
Witten.
Right. We lose Mark? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, that's no comparison there.
Right.
No comparison there.
So I don't want to get overly down on my Cowboys because I did think, all that being said, I thought the defense stepped up, played pretty well, Mark. I thought I didn't think Sean Lee played very good. He missed a bunch of tackles. I was kind of actually texting some of my friends. I was like, man, what's going on with Sean Lee? He's in position, but he's just missing tackles. But I did think Jalen Smith looked really good. Saw Leighton Vander Esch out there some, that defensive line. I thought they did some nice things getting up the field. I mean, that's a pretty potent Carolina Panther rushing attack, and I thought throughout the course of the game, I thought they did a pretty nice job. So that defense does look to be improved. The problem is that offense.
Yeah.
Scott Linehan's boys did not look
Dallas
good.
Dallas defense is
on
very
Sunday,
improved.
Mark.
If the Cowboys defense is healthy, I think it's a very good defense. With Lawrence up front, Lee, I think the Cowboys are pretty good. They're going to be pretty good at stopping people this season. So I don't think the season's over, but I think the offense is in more trouble than I envisioned, and I think the defense is a little bit better than I envisioned.
Think about how much they've got allocated to their offensive line.
Half dozen to the other.
They got Tyron Smith, one of the highest paid tackles. They got Zach Martin, one of the highest paid guards. Okay. And they gave up 6 sacks, Mark, and they ran the football for 4.3 a clip. Again, when you're going to dedicate that much to the offensive line and you're not able to dominate the line of scrimmage, it's going to be problematic.
All right, we need to take an opening timeout. Adam Amin of ESPN, he will have the call of the Cowboys and the Boise State.
This is our very own Adam Amin, ESPN play-by-play, who's on the call, Georgia Tech, South Florida. Hanging out with you today in Okarchee at Carter Chevrolet. So welcome to the show, Mr. Adam Amin. Great call, man. You had a heck of a game, 49-38 win by South Florida on Saturday.
I was impressed by what we saw from South Florida, man, and I know you and I obviously got a great look at them late last year, and I wasn't sure, right? How are these guys going to combat with losing arguably the greatest quarterback they've had in their short program's history, in Quentin Flowers, and this kid Blake Barnett, a lot of people remember him, Alabama number one recruit, doesn't pan out for him. He gets pulled in his first career start. ends up at Arizona State, ends up as a backup there. Then Herm Edwards comes in. He ends up leaving. And he finally finds a home in South Florida, and he looks like a viable quarterback. And I'll tell you, man, I think with Boise State coming into Oak State this week, UCF, who's still rolling, Houston, Marshall, I would even say Hawaii. I mean, there's some legit group of five teams out there right now that I think people should keep their eyes on as the season goes on.
Adam, the Boise State team is coming into Oklahoma State on Saturday. This is one of the better games, I think, that we'll see this weekend. They are so good up front on the offensive line, very experienced there, and the defense outstanding. How do you see the game developing in the trenches on Saturday?
Yeah, I think the one concern that Mike Gundy has really had is, as good as the offense has been in terms of putting up some points, just the concern of this offensive line play, run blocking. He said he wants to see a little bit more from there. He felt like the O-line play was a little bit sloppy. And that's where Boise State has made its money the last couple of seasons. They've got a really stacked front, whether it's Curtis Weaver, who's turned into one of the really explosive defensive ends in college football. I don't think a lot of people have been talking about him. He's a freshman last year. And Dusty and I got a look at him, what, three times last season? He was legit. He was a third-down pass rusher who's developed into just about an every-down type of guy. Jabril Frazier is excellent. They have a very veteran defensive tackle in David Moa, who is expected to play this week again. So I feel like this front of Boise State, along with a veteran back end, and they've returned just about everybody off that defense last year, other than Leighton Vander Esch, who got drafted by the Cowboys. That's going to be a concern for me. And Boise State offensively, with their front on the O-line, they've made their money as a running team for a long time. Jay Ajayi, Doug Martin. Right now they've got a great kid in Alexander Madison at running back. They've built themselves on O-line play. And while it wasn't great early last year, it got better as the season went on. And I think that is where Boise State can win this game. And that's how I think they've won games like this in the past, with offensive line play and a strong defense. The hallmarks for that program, I think they're established for this season as well. This might be one of the better Boise State teams we see in the last couple of years.
To Adam's point, Boise State averaging 6.9 yards a carry, 6 touchdowns on the ground. What's impressed me, Adam, is the quarterback play of Brett Rippon, because as you mentioned, we saw them a lot last year, and it was a mixed bag with Brett Rippon. At times he was downright bad. He got benched. They went to Montel Cozart, and then towards the end of the season, he played much better, but 7 touchdowns and 0 picks, and he's completing over 73% of his passes. Brett Rippon in his senior year sure seems to be playing some of his best football.
Yeah, this looks more like the Rippon of his first couple of seasons, the guy that we looked at as a potential NFL draft pick, as a maybe first or second round quarterback taken, and he's established himself as one of the better NFL prospects in college football. And for whatever reason, maybe it was the Montel Cozart factor last year, where maybe he was looking over his shoulder a little bit. He is the guy. And Brian Harsin has put his faith in his offense in this guy. And understandably so. He's got a great pedigree, one of the best in terms of the active quarterbacks, in terms of yardage in his career. He's looks like, and again, I know UConn's not going to put up the biggest fight, but to go to Troy, a good defensive team, that's been one of the better defensive teams in the Sun Belt in a Group of Five conference the last few years, to go to Troy on the road and put up the number of points that they put up, and for him to be as sharp as he has been, I'm impressed. Now, this is going to be obviously his toughest test so far, but I've been impressed with what I've seen to see Brett Rippon come back to form. Add the running game. This is a balanced offense, typically what Boise State has been. And as per usual, you have to keep in mind the trickeration, the creativity, and the versatility of a lot of guys on this offense. So you can't let any of that get by you if you're Oklahoma State this week. This is going to be a tough test for the Cowboys.
All right, 2 questions for you, Adam. Will you refer to Taylor Cornelius as the corn dog on the broadcast on Saturday? And secondly, what are your impressions of him so far?
Mike Gundy loves to ride. He called him corn dog like 10 times in the press conference, and I was cracking up every time he did it. I loved it. I don't know what was in that slushy, but it seemed like he put Mike Gundy.
It's a smoothie. It's a smoothie, Adam. Smoothie.
Yeah, it was a very good smoothie, I would imagine. No, I don't know how much Will tag of his corn dog. I'm sure he'll mention that that's Mike Gundy's nickname for him. But I got to tell you, man, what a great story this kid is. And when Oklahoma State has been at its best, especially under Mike Gundy, it's been because of quarterback play. Whether it's Zach Robinson, whether it's been Mason Rudolph, Brandon Whedon, a true great quarterback has defined Oklahoma State football for about a decade and a half now. And while Taylor is never going to go down as that guy because he wasn't a three-year starter, he wasn't a guy that's going to set all these records, he's a guy who's really bided his time. And to watch him run the offense as efficiently for the most part as he has so far, to put up the number of points that they put up against, again, lesser competition, I understand that. But he's adjusted well. They didn't get Justice Hill involved that much last week because of what the defense of South Alabama was giving him. So he decided to test downfield. And I can appreciate the adjustments that he makes. I can appreciate his knowledge of the offense, his understanding, his sensibility in this offense, his veteran poise, even though this is his first year starting since high school. I think it's a great story. I've been impressed by him. I think this game is not going to fall on his shoulders as much. I think this is really going to be about Justice Hill and that offensive line. But with the weapons that Oklahoma State continuously puts out there, Taylor Cornelius, if he has an efficient game and keeps Oklahoma State's offense balanced, I think this could be a big day for him. If Justice Hill can run the ball, you soften this defense a little bit, you can beat them over the top, but you have to establish a running game. And I think if Taylor Cornelius can do what he did the last couple of weeks against a better defense, Oklahoma State should be in this game, and they should be in a good position to win it.
He's got some weapons outside, man. They've got plenty of weapons at receiver and running back, and I'm glad you mentioned Justice Hill. You know, they've kind of been able to save him to a degree with some of these blowout wins and not put a lot of carries on him. For me, this is a game where Justice Hill needs north of 20 touches, because I totally agree with what you're saying. I said it earlier. I think that, you know, you've got to establish the ability to run the football, soften up that defense, and then I think there will be opportunities down the field. But you got to establish a line of scrimmage, and Justice Hill, he's one of the elite running backs in college football.
I agree, and I still feel like he's not a guy who gets his due. And I get it, man. Like, Anderson last year had a great season for Oklahoma. Unfortunately, you know, the injury this season. You know, TCU's had good running backs in the past. We've talked more about quarterback play, I think, in the Big 12 over the last few years than necessarily focusing on running backs because of Mayfield, because of Rudolph. I feel like Will Grier, obviously, at West Virginia. So we seem to focus in more on quarterback play, and maybe rightfully so. But I think Justice Hill still goes a little bit under the radar. One of the more talented guys we saw, what a year he had a couple of seasons ago, 1,500 yards last year. He puts up 15 touchdowns. I think this is one of the more underrated guys, and I don't think a lot of people in Oklahoma might feel that way. They go, hey, we love this guy. You know, we love this guy. We know what he's capable of as a carrier of the ball. Like you said, Dusty, he can be a workhorse, 20 to 25 touches a game. But I still feel like the general college football fan is still unaware of how good Justice Hill is. And I think he's, like we talked about, as essential of a factor as there is for Oak State on Saturday. And I think a key to the game if Oklahoma State's going to win the game.
Do you notice any difference in the OSU defense this year under Jim Knowles?
You know what? I feel like this is an opportunity to have one of their better defenses in the last 4 or 5 years to get under 400 yards a game. I haven't gotten a chance to really dive fully in on the tape, and I don't want to judge them based on the two games that they've played. You know, Missouri State, South Alabama, it's not really going to be a true test of what this defense wants to do and what they're capable of. I'm going to be interested to talk to him this week. We'll get a chance to visit with him on Friday before the game, and I really want to know, what did he see on tape? What did he want to adjust? And what did he think was important for the personnel that he has now to try to amplify and exploit what the strengths of this defense could be. To get them under 400 yards allowed a game, I think that's a viable possibility. I think that's certainly a goal that can be achieved this year by Oklahoma State. So I think that's something that we want to really learn this week. How do you do it against this offense? How do you do it against a veteran QB, against one of the better group of five running backs, against a team that has always had good offensive line play? This is a really good test. I think this will be the best barometer for Oklahoma State fans to really see what this defense is capable of or what they need to improve on.
A few more minutes to Adam Amin, play-by-play voice for ESPN. He will be in Stillwater on the call 2:30 Saturday, top 25 matchup as Boise State comes to town. Now, one thing I'm sure my listeners don't know, and I haven't even told Mark yet, This will be Adam's first time to Stillwater. So, Marcus, if you could, you know Adam's a man that loves some good tasting food. You got to get him some spots in Stillwater to go check out.
What you got, man?
Stillwater is a great town. I'm sure I can get you accommodated at the fabulous 7C Land and Cattle Steakhouse, which is just about 15 minutes away from Stillwater. But there's all kinds of great places to enjoy a little food and fun.
You got to go buy Eskimo Joe's.
Joe's tacos are pretty good. You can get a little you get the shredded beef tacos, not the ground beef tacos, which I prefer that. It's kind of like an upper class taco, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And people underappreciate the shredded beef taco. And I know a lot of people might go out and get a barbacoa taco. That's what we're talking about. Just that shredded, it has a good feel. It mixes well and absorbs salsa really well. So if you like salsa, I highly recommend eating shredded beef with it because you get the salsa into the pockets of the beef, which is really important.
They've got they've also got a brand new massive video board in Stillwater that I think you're going to like. I haven't even seen that thing yet. It's supposed to be unbelievable.
We were talking about it. And like, I don't know if it's going to rival like the AT&T board, in Arlington. But for the size of this place, and that's the other thing that we talked about on our team call and our conference call today with our production crew, and we were discussing this. The atmosphere in Stillwater, underrated, and I've only watched it on TV. I've never experienced that intimate, like, they're right on top of you. Dusty, I know you played there. You played multiple times in that stadium. That's a hostile environment to go into, and I think one of those underrated atmospheres in college football that we don't always talk about because it's not a mammoth stadium. It's 55, 56,000.
In 6 years on the sidelines that I did with OU, Adam, the loudest stadium that I was in was the 2002 Bedlam game. That was –
And I was, unfortunately – on the sidelines. Here's the thing about that stadium.
Oregon, Alabama, I mean, all kinds of places. A&M, that was
the only one louder was A&M in Stillwater in 02, both those years. That was extremely loud. And I would say for you guys and Quinn, you guys should show that because it is one of the tightest, crowds right there. I mean, you have the wall, the fans sitting right there, and typically, the players' benches are almost backed up to that wall. So it's as tight, as close quarters as you're going to find anywhere in college football. And if things are going right for Oklahoma State, those fans are going to let you hear about it, Adam. I mean, they will beat you down and beat you down and beat you down. And if the game's not going your way, I'd be lying if I would say it doesn't get to you. It definitely got to me.
Yeah, I think that's something that we want to show off a little bit. I thought they really did a nice job on Saturday night at Kyle Field. The ESPN crew were showing off the atmosphere of that place. And, again, it's a massive stadium that's built way up high, and it's so loud there. And I think this is a nice juxtaposition to have that intensity and that intimacy and that aggressiveness from a fan base that's so close to the field. It's a nice juxtaposition. It doesn't have to be a 100,000-seat stadium to feel like it's 100,000 people screaming at you. So I think that's a great idea, Dusty, and we talked a little bit about that today, just how we could emphasize that. And I think when you guys tune in on Saturday for Oklahoma State, we're going to try to show that off a little bit because I really feel like it's an underrated place in college football.
I like Oklahoma State.
He's Adam Amin, one of the best play-by-play voices in all the land. He will be on the call. Oklahoma State hosting Boise State, a top 25 matchup, 2:30 on ESPN this coming Saturday. Enjoy Stillwater. Have a great call, my man. We'll talk to you again next week.
I'll be looking forward to taking the baton from you guys when you're at Syracuse, brother. Have a good one.
All right, man. There you go, Adam Amin, one of the best dudes in the business. By the way, at him on Twitter. Come on, Oklahoma State fans. Show my boy a good time. He loves to eat. He loves the people. So if you get on Twitter, at Adam Amin, be sure to give him some great locations to go have a good bite to eat while he stays in Stillwater. I'm an Okarchi today here at Carter Chevrolet, where they're making friends selling cars in that order. How about a new 2018 Chevrolet Silverado Z71 starting at $33,500? That's $15,000 off the MSRP, and over 140 used cars and trucks in stock to choose from. Prices starting at $5,000. We've got
on either side of the football, commanding win over the Raiders.
Yes. The Raiders. Hey, you agree with what I said earlier, though, right? Did you hear what I said about that play?
No.
That should be a run. Like, I'm not going to get overly upset about it, but as it relates to fantasy, I think that that is unbelievably weak, that essentially a jet sweep, but it's just a flip instead of a handoff, is considered a touchdown pass for a quarterback.
Were you on the wrong side of that?
No, not at all. It didn't affect me in the least. I saw that last night, and it was a touchdown pass, and I thought, that's not a touchdown pass. You kidding me? He didn't pass the ball. Tossed it up in the air as the guy ran by. How are we gonna give a quarterback credit for that? Come on. No? Y'all aren't feeling me on this?
It's a pass.
I hadn't put a whole... my level of passion on that is much less than yours. That doesn't mean you're wrong.
I don't know if I'm overly passionate. I just think it's...
No, because if the running back drops it, it goes incomplete.
I mean, I guess, but again, it's not really a pass.
I think the missile hit on that there.
It's a pass.
Oh, then what's the difference if you run a toss play?
You throw it backwards, and if they drop it, it can be fumbled.
Okay. I mean, listen, you don't have to explain the rules of football to me. All I'm telling you is that ain't a pass.
You asked what the difference
was. I would give a quarterback more credit for a toss than that little flip that they do. That's one of the easiest things a quarterback can possibly do in football. I mean, just flip it up right there. It's a flip.
It goes forward. It's a pass, yes. It's a pass.
Whatever. Again, ridiculous.
All right, we have breaking news, as you alluded to, in college football, and here is that breaking news. NC State, West Virginia is canceled. Not rescheduled, canceled. Also, UCF in North Carolina, which I think Josh Heupel was about ready to go in there and put up a bunch of points on that North Carolina defense, also canceled. So there's a couple of games, one that we were really looking forward to, that will not be played this weekend. Hey, back to Mike Gundy.
You think they reschedule real quick? You think they reschedule those?
No. It says cancel, not postpone. Nope.
Okay.
No.
I would think that NC State's going to try to do whatever they can to try to get that somehow, if they can manipulate the schedule somewhere later. It would not shock me if they try to make that game happen. Don't know if it will.
It says that NC State will try to find a replacement game to fill out their home schedule. So they're not going to move it. I think West Virginia would have to move another game to accommodate NC State to play when they have an opening. So I don't think that's going to work to reschedule this game. NC State will probably try to find some 1AA team or something like that to come in and play on its off week.
So they can get to their 7. Florida State kind of did that last year.
Yeah, that's Florida State. They got to be careful with those teams that they're scrimmaging in 1AA. Almost went bad for them on Saturday night.
Mark, how about the fact that? Sorry, I'm getting ready for that game. So Samford, they had 5 turnovers and still almost beat Florida State. They've turned the ball over 5 times, and they're still in position to win at the end of the game. Just crazy. Crazy, crazy.
We need you to practice. I think we need you to practice before you head out for Syracuse on Thursday to give 5 compliments to Florida State.
We've been talking about bad offensive line play. I can tell you one compliment
they're
I
terrible.
Won't be giving is their offensive line. Watching that Virginia Tech tape, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how bad it was. I mean, it's just crazy.
It's been a 3-year problem there. Mike Gundy said yesterday that he was concerned on...
Hang on one second. A listener just came in. He hands me a piece of paper. He says, it's a pass, smiley face. I won my game with that play. Well done, sir. Thanks for stopping in. Really appreciate that. So, in my book, you are the... we'll keep that to ourselves. Okay, very good. Sorry, Mark. I thought that was pretty good. The listener agrees with you in the missile.
I think Missile's explanation is pretty good. If it can be a fumble, if it's an incomplete pass, then it's a pass. If it's a live ball, that's a little different. Okay, I'm gonna.
I'd say that should be a
really,
fumble.
Really,
personally, go ahead.
This is an inconsequential comment. So, Mike Gundy had said yesterday that he doesn't know. That he feels like if he's watching the Jumbotron, that's kind of a violation, or it's something that makes the coach look like he's not paying attention. And I completely disagree. So. If you're at Cowboys Stadium, most places where you are in the stadium, it is easier to watch that big screen television than it is
moth to flame, man.
The game. And so for Mike Gundy, who doesn't have a very good seat in terms of seeing what's going on the field because he's standing at ground level, I love the atmosphere and the excitement of the game from the field, and that's where I would prefer to be. But clearly he should watch the Jumbotron. Why wouldn't you? You got a close up. You got better. Yeah, it's much easier to see what's going on down there from that, looking at that big TV.
I got no problem with that. I watch.
Felt like I was
going to
give him some good
advice
there. Don't feel bad about it. I mean, you can't see what the heck's going on. You got one guy standing in front of you, and you're blacked out from everything. That Jumbotron is the largest television I've ever seen in my life. Just watch it.
You know, it's funny. I've watched many college coaches. You know, maybe not the head coach. I feel like I typically see the head coach always have his eyes on the field. But if you watch on a college football Saturday, if you watch the sidelines, and there's a big Jumbotron, there's a lot of coaches that are staring up at the Jumbotron for exactly what you're saying. They can get a much better idea as to what's going on, how their players are doing, especially if it's in the front seven. Typically, you get a much better view to try to get an idea of what's happening on the field in real time.
I don't think they should feel bashful about that or ashamed about that at all. All right, one more. I'll just say this. Look, on the shovel pass, that's almost a half-assed shovel pass.
It ain't a shovel pass. A shovel pass is what they used to. What we always see with Quentin Griffin,
because it's underhanded.
Where the quarterback would step forward and actually kind of throw the ball.
Underhanded.
This is a flip, man. This is
it's
a flip.
Up in the
just
air,
up
forward.
In the air. It's
up
not even really forward though. It's just like up.
It is forward. It's forward,
I think if you drop that play in football, that should be a fumble. That's not an incomplete pass for me. They should rewrite the rule book. That's a rush.
Say if that was a like the Raiders Patriots playoff game on the tuck rule. If that decided a really important game and they call that say the defense is down, they pick that up and run it back the other way for a touchdown on their home field, and they say, wait a minute, whoa, that's an incomplete pass, I think the place would go bonkers. So clearly I get it.
You're right. But you're right. I just know at some point, as we've seen, we already had a listener come in and helped him win a fantasy game. At some point, it's going to affect you guys in a negative way, and I don't want to hear you. All I'm going to say is I told you so. It's a dumb rule. They need to fix it. Let's stop padding these quarterback stats, for goodness sake, as if we need to do anything else to help the frickin' quarterback. You know what I mean? It's like I'm this defensive lineman in a quarterback world. And there's nothing I can do about it other than hang out here at a fine place in Okarchi. At Carter Chevrolet, they're making friends. They're selling cars in that order. Check out the new Lifted Silverado starting at $39,950. Over 140 used cars and trucks to choose from. They start as low as $5,000. All the inventory online. CarterChevroletOK.com. Here's what we got next hour. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN college football analyst. He was on the West Virginia NC State game. We'll get his thoughts on that decision. Also, he called SMU TCU last Monday. We'll also talk some more college football and the Big 12 slate. All that. Welcome back. It's hour number two here on the Monsters of the Midday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Mark Rogers in studio. Dusty Dvorak here in Okarchi at Carter Chevrolet's. Welcome in our next guest, college football analyst, 13-year NFL vet, Mr. Dan Orlovsky joins the show. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Before we had you on before the season, you hadn't started doing games yet. You've got a few under your belt. You've done a heck of a job. You're also a star on Get Up in the Morning. I see you on the TV screen all the time. So what's this first few weeks been like for you now that you're a full-fledged member of the media?
Well, first off, what's your Venmo name so I can send you some money for those comments? I appreciate them. No, it's been a blast, man. It's been a lot of fun to kind of dive right in. Obviously, very newly from the NFL world, and to kind of get reacclimated to the college football world, although I followed it pretty good, just reacclimated even more so, and have the opportunity to get on some campuses, meet some coaches, do live games, which has been like so much fun. It's been a blast to be a part of, and I've kind of re-fallen in love with college football all over again.
What are the Get Up studios like? Is it as scenic as it looks on TV? I mean, I know that necessarily those rivers in New York aren't as beautiful as some in other places, but is it a pretty cool studio?
Yeah, the studio is incredible. I mean, as up-to-date and techie as you could imagine, New York City in 2018. It's in a really cool location, kind of overlooking the Brooklyn Bridge, which is, you know, just near Manhattan. And, it's not fun to get to, and you can take 30, 35 minutes to go 2 miles, but it's a really cool setting.
Okay, let's get to the football. You know, we were really looking forward to the game you were supposed to have West Virginia at NC State there in Raleigh. But obviously Hurricane Florence has changed things a little bit, and we've just found out here in the last half hour or so that that game is canceled. Can you walk us through anything that you might know that we don't? And then does that mean you get a free week off, or have they already put you on a new game?
Well, I mean, you know, as everybody knows, football kind of takes secondary to what it seems is going to happen over there on the coast of the Carolinas. I give everybody credit for understanding the situation and probably making the right and safe choice. It's crazy. We were actually on calls with the West Virginia kids. We were with Will Greer and David Sills, and transferring or kind of going over to our production call meetings to set up the storylines for the week. And within 10 minutes of starting that, they got the call that the game was going to be moved. So unfortunate for I guess, the football fans and us. I was obviously looking forward to it being a quarterback. Because both those kids are going to be Ryan Finley from North Carolina State and Greer from West Virginia will be in the first-round conversation, I'm sure. Will Greer will be in the Heisman conversation. They've got some weapons on the outside, so it's a bummer not to be able to see that game. But, you know, like I said, the right choice. I do not get a week off. I have the fortune and the awesome opportunity to go do the Thursday night game now, which is going to be ESPN, Wake Forest, Boston College at Wake Forest. So
very nice.
Yeah. So I'm stoked to kind of pick that up and work with the guy Dave Fleming, who everyone raves about, and Laura Rutledge on the sidelines, who I have a little bit of time with at Get Up. So no time off, but I don't want it, man. I'm excited for that game.
What are Will Greer's strengths, and do you see him as a potential number one quarterback taken in the draft next year?
Yeah, strength, and I said this to him, he reminds me a lot in a good way of Rex Grossman. Like, he is just this dude who wants to chuck the ball up and down the lot and has supreme confidence in his arm. And it's really impressive to watch some of the throws that he makes. Like any guy who has incredible confidence, it'll get him into, you know, a problem here or there. But that confidence, you can't fake that. I also love the fact that how he works in the pocket. You know, there's different methods the guys want to move in the pocket. Some guys are the typewriter feet, as it's been described, kind of pistons up and down. Some guys are a little bit more methodical and in control. He's a lot like, you know, if you want to call it the Tom Brady type feet in the pocket, where very still, very under control, and it looks like he's always ready to throw the football. Very Drew Brees-like in a way, if we want to call it. Just constant, you know, Kyler Murray's like, I've seen that from him as well down in Oklahoma. Just not, these guys are always ready to deliver the ball, which I've liked. You know, he'll be in the conversation because he can throw it. A big thing is, and I've been outspoken about this, our NFL offense is a little bit more willing to adapt some of the stuff that we see in college concept-wise. And if they are, then some of these kids that come from these spread-out offenses and Jared Goff having success, those guys will have more opportunity to get drafted early.
Talking with Dan Orlovsky, ESPN College football analyst. Okay, you also had TCU SMU. I told you on the text, we're in Big 12 country, so we're always trying to figure out whatever we can about Big 12 schools. Nice call is a monsoon, and it almost seemed like TCU sleptwalked through the first half, but they came alive in the second half. What was your takeaway, the Horned Frogs?
Yeah, you know, they're TCU's SID kind of said, you know, whenever we go and play a night game at SMU, often we just start slow, and then we kind of wake up and take control. And so I wasn't totally taken aback by the start. You know, SMU played North Texas early on in week one, and North Texas is pretty good, and they got handled and didn't play well, and you could see they came out motivated. But I'll tell you this, man, I knew about TCU, I did, and then I started to, like, watch tape over this year and last year, do more background study on the program, the success it's had, Gary Patterson, and it's like, you can sit back and marvel at the stuff that he's been able to accomplish there and really kind of build a program and then sustain the program. And the stat that really stood out to me about this team and this program is there's five teams in the country that within three out of the last 4 years have finished in the final top 10 AP poll at the end of the year, three out of the last 4 years. It's Oklahoma, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, and TCU, you know? And so that kind of speaks to the accomplishments of that program. They got some dudes on their team, guys outside. They got two receivers are Jalen Reagor and Kevontae Turpin are absolute light of switch, light of match, electric with the ball in their hands. The young quarterback, Sean Robinson, that they love. He's probably the biggest recruit they've ever gotten. I was really impressed with their offensive coordinator, Sonny Cumbie, play calling wise and understanding how to go about, you know, scripting an offense. So I'm excited to see that game this weekend as Ohio State comes down there. So I was very much
so
impressed.
Think they can give him a game? Think they can give him a game?
I do. I really do. You know, Gary Patterson is very smart when it comes to, okay, you do this really well, I'm going to take that away more often than not. And so defensively, I expect them to hang, at least make Dwayne Haskins earn, because it's not that it's been easy on him the past 2 weeks, Ohio State's quarterback, but no one's really challenged him, you know, and I expect TCU's defense to challenge Ohio State both schematically and athletically. A big deal is how is their quarterback, Sean Robinson, going to play? Because those receivers that I mentioned, Jalen Reagor and Kevontae Turpin, they can hang. And if you get those guys in the ball, those guys the ball in space against anybody in the country, athletically they're going to be on par or better. And so if their quarterback can do a nice job, I'll say this. If he's willing to, you know, use his legs a little bit more instead, you know, because, again, we got to make this guy a pocket passer. When you're playing Ohio State, you got to be a football player at that position if that's a strength of yours. And so if Sean Robinson utilizes his legs at the right moment, they've got a good shot to hang and get that game into the fourth quarter.
I thought that was a little bit of the key of what Oklahoma did last year, is they kept Ohio State's defense guessing on where they're going to run or pass, and that multifaceted quarterback would be pretty tough. But does TCU have enough across the board at each position to win battles? You know what I mean? Is that they seem to me to be the less talented team of those two at a lot of different spots on the field.
Most teams in the country are going to have less across the board, right, than Ohio State,
right,
because they're so incredible. But you've got to look at, okay, where can we gain an advantage back? One, we've got a big-time head coach who knows exactly how to attack certain schemes on offense and then how to, you know, shut down the things you do well. So that's a big thing. Ohio State's going to be without Urban Meyer in those crucial situations. Is that something to pay attention to, where TCU's going to have the advantage in those really crucial moments? That's going to be an advantage for TCU. And, you know, do they have a playmaker at the quarterback position that either, one, is just significantly better at throwing the ball, or two, you know, athletically can run around a little bit and make some plays? And TCU kind of has that DNA. And so I just wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't be surprised if TCU hangs and gets this game to the back end of the second half with an opportunity to hang on. Now, Ohio State is so talented. In my brief time spending with them, I was really taken aback with Gary Patterson.
He's legit, man. GP, he's one of the better coaches in college football that doesn't typically come up at the top of conversations when you have him. Dan Orlovsky is our guest, ESPN college football analyst. You mentioned Kyler Murray. If you had a chance to watch any of his tape, thoughts on him?
I've been really impressed with him. You know, he's a much better run-around athlete than I thought. I'm not ready to go and say Kyler Murray is Baker Mayfield. I'm not. Baker Mayfield displayed, one, he was the best deep ball passer in college football last year, and then, two, he had the ability to make all kinds of appropriate throws. Now Kyler Murray has been very impressive, and if he continues on this track, it's going to be a very easy transition from one guy to the next. I will say this, though. Those two receivers Oklahoma has, and Hollywood Brown and CeeDee Lamb, are bananas good. And so, I've been retired for almost a year and a half now, and I haven't thrown a football. I feel like I can go play pretty well with those dudes. I mean, the athleticism that they have has been impressive, just getting the ball to them wherever they wanted. But I've been pleasantly surprised with Kyler Murray. My favorite thing that he does is his willingness to push the ball down some seams. I've enjoyed watching those kinds of throws. I'm really excited to watch him kind of start playing some Big 12 games even more and what he can do. But they're in a good place right there.
How about Tua? There seems to be a wide-ranging opinion on him. I think everyone's positive, but some of the praise is just effusive that he may be one of the better dual-threat quarterbacks that we've seen in college football in a long time and ages. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, first of all, his name is LeBron because that's what I referenced him to not
right.
long ago.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, here's my thing when it comes to Tua. And people can say a lot. I know quarterback play, and I know how it's supposed to be operated and seen it done at an incredibly high level. The thing that's marvelous about Tua is he is doing everything when it comes to playing quarterback, whether it's throwing with anticipation, seeing windows, feeling color, getting the ball out of your hands on time, anticipation, changing tempo of the ball that you throw, and then putting the ball in his hands and being a running option, making plays outside of the pocket, second reactionary type stuff when there's a play breaks down. He's doing all of that at such a high level, so quickly, it makes you go, wait, is this guy as good as we think he is? Is this guy as good as what we've seen? Because we haven't seen somebody do all of that at that high a level this quickly. We've seen a Cam Newton, but Cam took a couple years, and he was, you know, remarkable. And we've seen Johnny Manziel do a lot of fun things, but Johnny Manziel's, you know, was built out of chaos. Tua's is built out of execution. And he's just performing and operating at a level at that spot we haven't seen in a really long time. And it makes you go, like, this kid may be able to do some stuff that we haven't seen before at that spot, maybe ever, just because he's doing it such a high level.
All right, Dan, you do know quarterback play, and I trust your assessment as much as anybody out there. I want to go to the NFL. You also do preseason work for your former team, the Detroit Lions. I would love for you to assess both those quarterbacks. What was going on with Matthew Stafford last night? And then obviously the rookie Sam Darnold in his debut in a starting role.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised as anybody about how Matthew played. I also say this. If I'm a betting man, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I'm putting a lot of money next weekend because I know that dude, and he's going to come out motivated. Not that he's not motivated, but he's going to come out embarrassed. And he's throwing haymakers next week. And so that's just how he's wired. You know, last night's performance, you know, the first interception is him trying to bait a cover two trap corner into jumping an out route, and he's trying to throw a hole shot behind him. Not the greatest decision, no. It's not this egregious decision. The corner made a nice play. Good for him. The second interception is kind of a basic thing. He doesn't see a safety play over the top of a flat route. The corner drives a slant. Bad decision by him. The third one, he kind of gets a little bit fooled by a zone linebacker, and the pressure forces him to make a decision probably earlier than he wants to. Not a good decision. So I'm not freaking out about it. What I am freaking out about, if you're a Lions person, is their offensive line playing as bad as they did. There's way too many assets and money invested into the offensive line. So Matthew Stafford for them is the least of their worries. Now, Sam Darnold did everything that I had hoped, you know, crossed my fingers. I've said that Sam Darnold has got transcendent traits. He doesn't need to have perfect feet to be accurate. That was on display last night. It matters because the Jets offensive line is not fantastic. His creativity matters because the Jets offensive line isn't fantastic. I also said he's got this trait where he cares enough not to care. And so when things go bad, which they did that first play of the game, Sam Darnold could care less. He's just going to go play ball. And the fact that he went and had that first play, the pick six, on a road game in a tough environment against a quarterback like Matthew Stafford and a new head coach, Matt Patricia, who many people believe is a really good defensive mind, and to rebound the way he did, that is the most impressive thing of the evening. So the Jets have to be ecstatic. The Giants have to be kicking themselves.
Wait, what's going on with the Lions for all these years? With Dan, with the running game, I mean, it's they've gone a long time without being able to establish a 100-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard rusher in a season, and giving Matt Stafford some support that way.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew. I really do, because I'd be making a gajillion dollars being the GM. You know, they haven't had a 100-yard rusher since 2013, and I mean, that's fascinating. It's a combination of, you know, the temperament of the group. The execution of the group, what kind of offensive team do we want to be? Because you are an offense, you're a passing team, right? Your weapon is your quarterback, and you have relied on that for such a long time, and so have the guys around there, that maybe you have become too reliant and dependent upon it. But man, I say this, if they can fix their run game and actually make it somewhat reliable, it's like giving Stafford a second hand in a fight. You know, right now he's fighting with one hand but tied behind his back. So it'll be something interesting to watch for them moving forward.
Dan, thanks so much for the time. Well, you got to be on a flight like what, tonight or in the morning, if you've already been thrown a Thursday night game. It's a quick turnaround.
I'm popping out tomorrow morning, but you know what? I'm super thankful for the opportunity, and I'm, you know, this is how you do. You're like this, Dusty. Brock Huard, who's going to do the game, he was going to, but he's going to stay with this Saturday game now. Brock Huard called me and is going to kind of get me up to speed because he was prepping. So you talk about a good dude right there, man. I'm excited for the opportunity. I'm thankful for him. And like I said, he reminds me a lot of you, man. So I appreciate it.
A lot of good dudes in this industry, and you are definitely one of them. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN college football analyst. You'll check him out Thursday night, Wake Forest, Boston College. He'll be on the call. Thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it, guys.
There you go. We are here today. As I say we, I mean myself. I'm hanging out here in Okarchi at Carter Chevrolet. They're making friends selling cars in that order. How about a 2018 Silverado Z71 starting at $33,500, more than $15,000 off MSRP, over 140 used cars and trucks to choose from right here at Carter Chevrolet in Okarchi. I do want to break down some of the college football games for Kyler Murray. Went for 306 on 19 of 33 passing, 3 touchdowns, did have the 1 pick. His deep ball has been really good, Mark. The intermediate stuff, he's been off a little bit, but I think on the whole, the throwing, we saw the athleticism, his ability to run as he ran in 2 scores the other day. I think he's been probably better than what I even expected here to start this season, Mark.
He has been much better than I would expect to start the season. Not much better, but he's been better than I expected to start the season. There's a lot of talk today that Oklahoma's offense is just as good as it was last year. I don't think we can tell that after the first 2 games because I don't think the tests have been that great. But the running and the what you have to pay attention to with Kyler Murray at quarterback and have to defend for will open up some things down the field, and he can throw the football down the field. So he's been good. He's been better than I thought he would be.
Hey, you know, it's interesting. I agree. I think CeeDee Lamb, Marquise Brown might be I'd probably say Ole Miss. I'd take A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf over them too, just because they're so physically imposing. But this would be one of the top wide receiver duos in the country. Do you remember when Marquise Brown got here, Mark? Do you remember what the conversation was?
Too small.
Remember that?
Play.
Remember that? There was a huge festival on this radio station about how small this dude was. And it was like a laughing stock. Because what was he, like 148 when he got there? I think is what it was. That was what was reported.
Speed,
and then it just
man.
Turned
Speed.
Into this joke that there was no way this guy could play here. And now he's turned into one of the most explosive receivers in the country. Marquise Hollywood Brown, as we saw him take a curl route the distance the other day. I think offensively Oklahoma's been a little bit better than I thought. Offensive line, though, they weren't as dominant against UCLA, Mark, as they were against Florida Atlantic. And they're going to really be tested this week in Ames, Iowa. And Lincoln Riley talked about that challenge of taking on the Cyclones.
Excited about this game week coming up. Going to be a big one for us, certainly, you know, in so many ways. One, you're playing a really good football team on the road, you know, opener to Big 12 play. You know, our third game here where we've done some decent things here the first 2 weeks, but got a lot of improvements to make. So it's just it's a really important game for us.
It is an important game, a revenge game. And, Mark, we don't know exactly who's going to be playing quarterback. Kyle Kemp, who came into Norman and led as a 31-point dog, led the upset. But he got hurt, nicked up in that game the other day against Iowa. Zeb Nolan came into the game. I think Kyle Kemp, the much better quarterback that I've seen than Zeb Nolan. So who's going to be playing quarterback for the Cyclones? Very much a question mark as we sit here on Tuesday.
I think that's a big deal. I don't know why Iowa State had so much problems running the football. That game, they went right down the field and they got stopped on the 1 yard line. Iowa is pretty good defensively. I also think that, you know, to me, this is
OU should win this game based on what happened last year. I don't think there's any potential for a look ahead. I'm not worried about Kyler Murray being on the road as a starter. And so if OU had kind of performed poorly in the first couple of weeks and Iowa State had performed well, then I think maybe you give some consideration to that. But I think OU is going to pass this test pretty easily.
I think that not having Alan Lazard is a huge deal for Iowa State, Mark. He was kind of that safety blanket outside that he was just so much more, you know, he's bigger and more physical, and you could just kind of throw the ball up to him. And we saw that time and time again. And I think that from a defensive, you know, schematic standpoint, it made you as a defense kind of keep that safety up there and have eyes on him so you could protect and try to help your cornerbacks. And that probably opened up a lot of stuff in the running game for David Montgomery because, Mark, and I know Iowa's good up front, but David Montgomery, he has to get it going running the football for this Cyclone offense or at least get him the ball, you know, out of the backfield. They love to get him involved in screen plays, you know, just little flare-out routes, just anywhere they can get him the ball out in space. And Iowa completely held him into check. 2.6 yards a carry, only had 44 yards on the ground and just 3 catches for 15 yards. So, I mean, for me, if you're Iowa State, that's got to be a huge key. And Oklahoma's been pretty good up front. But if they don't have any way to establish David Montgomery, whether it be running the football or getting in the ball in the pass game, that's going to be very problematic, in my opinion.
Well, and probably, you know, one of the things, again, too, they're used to having Alan Lazard out there, and they threw a ball up in the end zone down there on the one-yard line that they didn't complete, which last mm-hmm. year maybe they complete, and if that game may change against Iowa if they can get out to a lead as low scoring as it was. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's going to be tough for Iowa State.
The other aspect for Iowa State, you know, their defense, no Joe Lanning. I mean, he's the quarterback of that defense. They still have Ray Lima, who's a really good nose tackle. They've got some other good players, but I don't know if I expect the exact same defense that we saw a season ago that was at times downright dominant, and you would have to say one of the better defenses in the Big 12. That being said, they only gave up 13 to Iowa.
They
did
have a true freshman. They had a true freshman named Mike Rose that came in. He's from Ohio, so probably one of those Matt Campbell finds that made 11 tackles last week. So he's a guy to watch this week, number 23 on defense. That's a pretty good debut.
Yes, a very good debut. Okay, also Oklahoma State and Boise. We spent a lot of time talking about that game, as we will continue to. As we mentioned, tomorrow we do have the voice of the Boise State Broncos coming on at 12:25. This not so much about the play on the field, but Mike Gundy has an interesting exchange as he talks about striping the stadium.
I spilled my dang smoothie. Look at that.
That's bad.
Gosh. No, I didn't. There wasn't any vodka. That's from this morning. Spilled that sucker. So, I forgot. Hey, you know what? It's striped the stadium in this game. So you guys can go to CoachGundy.com and get all the details. We got to stripe the stadium. So I'm guessing that all the people that that tune into this press conference for jokes and entertainment and not much or very little has to do with football, you'll know that it's striped the stadium. And I've always supported the officials and referees. They're all good friends of mine, so we're killing two birds with one stone. I'm glad I spilled that smoothie on my shirt.
Is there anybody in college football that's enjoying life as much as Mike Gundy right now?
Oh,
by the way, I'm on Coach Gundy. I'm on CoachGundy.com as we speak. It is a real site. This
that's
is
good.
It's alive and well.
We're going to find out what's the deal with these smoothies. Speculated by the Morning Animals, I think that Mike Gundy is a franchise or.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Franchisee. Sorry.
Is he also working at Foot Locker on the weekends in the off season? Is that
he
where
might.
He's getting the referee outfit?
That was kind of an old school referee outfit. It had too big a collar on it. Whoever he got that from was that was an older one.
My guess is it's like an old Halloween costume that he wore to one of his, you know, a party. I mean, that's a funny costume for a head football coach to be a referee.
Oh, it is? Yeah, I think so.
I couldn't imagine he just got one sitting in the closet to actually don. That had to be a Halloween party costume that just was able to get used for other purposes as well.
Like I said, I have a referee outfit in my closet, but that was...
I thought you were going to wear it each day. You said you're slimming. I thought you were going to wear it today.
Next time I'm out and about tomorrow, I might have it.
That game, we're going to continue to break it down. But for me, I mean, I really look at the line of scrimmage as much as anything else. And I just, I give an advantage, as we sit here today, to Boise State. And I think that their front seven is going to give Oklahoma State's offensive line some problem. What I'm not sure of yet, is can Boise State run the football effectively on Oklahoma State? Oklahoma State's defense look good. They're going to be tested in a totally different way by physical veteran offensive line that's played a lot of football together. So, crazy enough, an interior lineman is going to look to the interior line to be the difference in settling that game. But I think that the run is tied so much to the pass game, Mark. I mean, people don't want to acknowledge it, but when you can run the football effectively, you can open up a lot of things down the field for your quarterback, and especially as it relates to Boise State. That's kind of the straw that stirs the drink, that when they can run the football effectively, that's when they can really open things up and get the ball down the field.
I'm worried about their offensive line.
Oklahoma State's?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've had some reason to be worried about. All right, so we're taking West Virginia, NC State off the slate. But I talked about this earlier. I just think it's a big weekend. I just say it's a big opportunity for the Big 12 this weekend, which when you have an opportunity, it can go one of two ways. It can be a good, it can be a bad thing. But I do think it's interesting with taking West Virginia, NC State off the slate now that that's been canceled. Four of the five out-of-conference games, the Big 12 is favored in. Tech's favored over Houston. Texas favored over USC by 3. Oklahoma State's over Boise by 3. Baylor's favored over Duke, 6.5 in Waco. Now, I think you have to point out the fact that Daniel Jones, starting quarterback for Duke, broke his clavicle. He's out for this game in the foreseeable future. The only game of the five games that you would point to and say could be helpful, beneficial for the league would be Ohio State, TCU, and their 12.5-point dog. So if I tell you the Big 12 is favored in four of the five games, can they win? Will they win four of those five games, Mark?
No, they will not. They will not. I think that's going to be tough for the Big 12.
I think so. I think so, too.
You say under, right?
I don't think that they'll win four out of five. I don't. But I mean, again, Vegas has them favored in four of the five games. I mean, I do think that they need to show well, though, Mark. I mean, if we come back here next Monday and we talk about the Big 12 and these games are 0-5, and you've got Oklahoma State and Texas losing on their home field, that would not be a good look for the league. I think that I know exactly what Traber's take would be on that one. And though I told him I couldn't get down with him saying that the Big 12 stinks after week number one, after this week, if they don't show right in some of these games, I think it won't be just the ultimate making that statement. It'll be a lot of people.
It's still okay if you're Oklahoma, or it's still okay if you're West Virginia, if you keep winning games. Those two teams are going to have the perception, I think, of being pretty good teams, especially OU.
I agree with you. All I'm saying, though, is if you lose a game and then it comes down to resumes, it's tough to really get behind a resume when in the non-conference you got pushed around and beat up by a lot of teams.
The example of that is Wisconsin of last year.
Yep.
That's what it'd be like for Oklahoma. As long as you keep winning, you're going to be okay, and you were going to be in the college football playoff. But losing becomes problematic. I do think OU could. I think that there will be enough losses this year. I think Clemson and Alabama look to me like they're in pretty good shape. Georgia is a problem because if they lose once, then that one-loss team would probably get in ahead of a one-loss Oklahoma team. But I think OU would be okay as a one-loss team in comparison with any other one-loss teams.
I think of it as not just OU, but for the Big 12 to get a team in, not just Oklahoma, but if you want to give yourself the best opportunity to get a team in and you want to strengthen everyone's schedule, you want to, really bolster that resume, games like this weekend, these five different matchups that this league has, you can't just say they don't matter. They will matter, and they will be a big piece of a bigger puzzle when you start to put together resumes and you start to compare different teams that have one loss. So that's my takeaway. And if the Big 12 wants to step up and bolster their resumes and make a bit of a statement, they've got that opportunity with some marquee matchups coming up this weekend. I'm here today in Okarchee at Carter Chevrolet, where they're making friends selling cars in that order. Be sure to check out the 2018 Chevrolet Silverado Z71s. They start here at $33,500, over $15,000 off MSRP. A lot of great inventory, new and pre-owned, all right here at Carter Chevrolet. And you can check them out online at CarterChevroletOK.com. Quick break. We get back. We will close up shop before we turn over to the man. John Gruden back in the sidelines in the National Football League. Starts his second stint for the Raiders, 0-1 as they fall last night to the L.A. Rams. We had a double dip on Monday Night Football last night. Raiders looked good in the first half, but they played two halves in the NFL, and the second half was all about the L.A. Rams. Matter of fact, not just John Gruden, the new coach in the National Football League this year. Seven new coaches, Mark. They go 0-7 in the opening weekend in the National Football League. I'm hanging out here today in Okarchee at Carter Chevrolet, where they're making friends selling cars in that order. Be sure to check out some of the new lifted Silverados that start at $39,950, over 140 used cars and trucks in stock to choose from, and those start as low as $5,000. Be sure to check out inventory online at CarterChevroletOK.com. You know, we talked a lot yesterday about Rodney Anderson and his injury. We hate to see that. Obviously, injuries are a big part of football. I hated to see over the weekend when my Cowboys were playing Carolina, a good friend of mine in the show, Greg Olsen, goes down. You saw him over there in a boot. He was on crutches. He winds up breaking the same foot that held him last year. And, you know, it could be a career ender, Mark, because I know that just getting himself ready and getting out there to go again this season was a tall task. And now that he re-injures that same foot, I sure hope it's not the end if he doesn't want it to be. But that might be the end of the road for Greg Olsen. I'm sure he'll be in a broadcast booth or on a TV set somewhere if that is the case. But I hate to see him go down. And then also, Darrell Williams in the same game, Mark, you know, in the training camp, like first day of training camp, he had a bad knee injury, but not one that required surgery, and he battled back, he rehabbed back, and he was able to start that game against Dallas. He gets rolled up on that same knee, and I guess he is set to have surgery later this week. So a couple of Carolina Panthers and guys that won. It was a good friend of mine. The other, Darrell Williams, went to my high school and obviously played here at Oklahoma. Hate to see both those guys go down.
That does stink. And this time of the year, man, you got to really pay attention to the injuries in the league, because that's something that can affect teams a ton as guys go down.
No doubt, no question. You know, again, football, right, wrong, or indifferent. It just, injuries are, they're a nature of the beast, man. They're absolutely a nature of the beast. I haven't really talked about it on our show, Mark, but I'm pretty pumped up. I've got Syracuse, Florida State on Saturday, but then I'll be calling my first NFL game of the season. I've got the Ultimate Steelers hosting Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday at 1 on ESPN Radio. So I got a little double dip this weekend. Pretty fired up.
I'm jealous of you for the Steelers game. That's going to be a really good game. Do you think the Chiefs, I mean, that's a tough start to the season to have them go back-to-back on the road.
I know.
If they could take that. And again, Andy Reid, the greatest coach in regular season history in the NFL. That guy just doesn't lose. But when he gets to the playoffs, he can't do anything right.
Who knows? I didn't necessarily think Kansas City was going to go into the Chargers and get a victory. But, man, I'd be surprised if Pittsburgh doesn't take care of some of those turnovers and play much better when they get back to Heinz Field, which I've never been to Heinz Field. Really fired up to get a chance to potentially see the terrible towel get broken out.
I think that'll be great. I think the crowd, I think that the turnovers, last year Big Ben had some really bad games on the road. So I don't know why he's a old, wily veteran. Why would the home versus road dichotomy be much for him? But it seems like it's possible. I mean, at home last year, Dusty, he threw about, what? I think he averaged over 3 touchdown passes a game.
Probably. That's so. I know his numbers were absurd there at Heinz Field.
But why? I mean, I don't know. makes not a whole lot of sense to me. But that Steelers need a if the Steelers lose that game, man, my bet's starting
to
look.
You're looking
look
really good. You're looking
starting
really
to look good because the Ravens have a really good opportunity to win in Cincinnati on Thursday night. That'll be a good game to watch.
That will be a good game to watch. Your Ravens, I would say that's the team that had to open up the most eyes or make the biggest statement in week one. We can say it's the Buffalo Bills and how bad they stink, but you beat a team 47-3 in the National Football League. That's you're doing a lot of things right.
Well, we did mention during the break off the air that Nathan Peterman, no idea why he's the starting quarterback for any NFL team. He earned the Blutarski for his quarterback rating this weekend. It wasn't him all the way.
0.0.
Josh Allen played some in the game. I don't know what they're waiting on and why that last year they took out Tyrod Taylor and put him in the game. 5 interceptions later in one half. It's hard to overcome that.
Yes, yes, it is. Nathan Peterman ain't the answer in Buffalo, and he ain't the answer anywhere in the National Football League, Mark. His best days were at Pittsburgh when Matt Canada was running jet sweeps.
Yeah, that's right. Handed the ball off to James Conner.
Just think if he would have flipped it on those jet sweeps instead of handing it off, he'd have a lot more passing yards.
He might have gone a couple rounds higher.
He might have been in the Heisman Trophy conversation. You want to get a Matt Canada quarterback? I mean, get some crazy numbers. They run all those jet sweeps. They need to start just doing the jet flip instead of jet sweep. I mean, it would do, amazing things for the numbers and just the overall perception. Some of those quarterbacks.
There you have it.
There it is. That's the key to success, the key to putting on a good front for quarterbacks out there. More jet sweep flips, less throwing the ball down the field. I kid. But last night definitely opened my eyes to a flaw I've seen in the way we look at the flip in the National Football League. I was about to say the flip pass, but if I said flip pass, that would kind of go against the argument that I've been making here most of the day. All right, the missile says we got a break. Mark, it was a pleasure being with you today. I'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, different place. Big thank you to Carter Chevrolet right here in Okarchee, where they're making friends and selling cars in that order. We ask you not to step aside, but just wait around, because up next, it is the